The March 6, 2012 meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy is called to order, and let the record reflect that the time now is 3:05 p.m. For the record, we do have a quorum, and with us we have Representative Sadler, Representative Peterson, Representative Tuck, and myself chairing Representative Foster. And we do have excused here Representative Pruitt, Representative Lynn, and Representative Olson. And in the audience, I'd also like to recognize that we do have Representative Tammy Wilson with us. So thank you for joining us. If you'd like, you could come up and have a seat if you'd like.
Chairs are much more comfortable.
They are, yeah. It's, at this time, I'd like to ask everybody just if you could turn off your cell phones. It does affect the sound system. The purpose of today's meeting was to hear HB 323, which is the non-attainment area home heating system grants, the HB 336, which is the energy assistance program and vouchers, and HB 357, which was ADA sustainable energy program. However, we will be setting those aside until our next meeting, but today we will be hearing a presentation on the TOC biomass project. And so here with us today, we have Todd Pogue. He's the superintendent of the Alaska Gateway School District. And Thomas Deerfield, he's representing Dalston Energy, Inc., consultant to the Alaska Power and Telephone. We have Chris Mache, state forester for the Division of Natural Resources. And we have Dave Stancliffe, and representing the Alaska Gateway School District. Dave, if you would please come forward, and whoever else you would like to also come up, please join him. And please state your name and affiliation for the record, and certainly appreciate you coming and helping us to better understand what seems to be a really exciting, energy possibility here. And so, as I mentioned, just please state your name, affiliation for the record.
My name is Dave Stancliffe. I'm working with the Alaska Gateway School District and also with Alaska Power and Telephone. I'm vice president of the TOC Chamber of Commerce and, of course, spent many years in this building. And TOC is in a very unique position, in that we have a tremendous amount of resource that threatens our community each year, but we've found a way to harness that resource, and the excitement that's most current is our school has now not only heating the classrooms with biomass power, but also turning on the lights. And the district was in a position of having to spend more money to turn on the lights and heat the school than they were to spend for classroom instruction. And when it gets to that point and you've tipped over that far, and you're not connected to the other electrical grids in the state, you have to look around for solutions. The first part of today's program is an incredibly well-produced, I believe, DNR DVD video called Alaska's Green Gold. And after that time, we'll have each person present a short update to the committee as to where each project stands with regard to the public resource that you oversee, and to show the results of the funding that the legislature's provided, and see measurable results that not only have to do with power, but the well-being of our community and the education of our kids, because now we can have a music teacher and a counselor we couldn't afford because we're using renewable energy instead of writing a check to Crowley Marine. And so without further ado, could I start the DVD, Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave.
Lights.
Energy, it's all around us. This wildland fire near TOC, Alaska burned 18,000 acres in 6 days during the summer of 2010.
Maybe if you'd like to,
the energy released was enough to heat and power the TOC school for 400 years.
All right. This reminds me of the old Bijou Theater in my hometown. It was operated about the same way. Are we ready? Is the TV on also up here, Larry?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry if I jumped the gun here.
The Alaskan interior is a vast landscape, dynamic, diverse, and often dangerous.
We're going to run all the way back here. There we go.
Did the B-shoe have problems too?
Energy, it's all around us. This wildland fire near Tok, Alaska burned 18,000 acres in 6 days during the summer of 2010. The energy released was enough to heat and power the Tok school for 400 years. The Alaskan interior is a vast landscape, dynamic, diverse, and often dangerous. How can communities like Tok stay safe from wildfires with so much fuel all around them? In 2007, local area forester Jeff Hermans put his education and ideas to the test. Referencing the overgrown spruce forests adjacent to the community, he coordinated fuel reduction efforts and proposed pre-planned fuel breaks to provide firefighter access and develop defensible space.
You know, when I first got to Tok and started looking at this, and we started realizing the scope of the problem, again, through the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, we mapped out just how many acres of hazardous fuel we had in Tok, and it was almost 40,000 acres of contiguous, high-volume hazardous fuel, with the community set right smack dab in the middle of it. That's a huge problem.
CWPP stands for Community Wildfire Protection Plan. The plan is written by local people, state, and federal agencies. The CWPP takes steps to prepare and mitigate communities for threats of wildfire.
Top priorities that we identified in the Community Wildfire Protection Plan was the Tok School. And the Tok School, number one, is the designated evacuation point for the community. You know, you have one road in and one road out of the school, and there was fuels right up to the edge of the road. And there was definitely a potential that people could definitely get harmed at the school, and that people could become entrapped at the school and not be able to get in or get out. It's just not acceptable for your evacuation point to potentially be threatened by a wildfire. And that's where we'd start looking at the trees going, okay, you know, they're not big enough for solid logs, they're not big enough for a lot of conventional products, you know, but what they are good for is for energy. And we've always known there's a lot of energy in wildfire, but we really didn't quantify it. We really didn't do our research to really find out just what the potential for the energy was, you know, in this green gold in this forest that we have. And so we started doing our research.
Part of that research and development was involving Tok community members. Together, they planned to reduce hazardous fuels around Tok to prevent wildfire, chipping the leftover wood to burn in a boiler that would heat and eventually power the school. Their involvement was essential to the success of the project.
If you look back in history, I mean, I've seen pictures of Dawson City in the early 1900s. In 1898, Dawson had a population of 40,000 people. In 1901, you couldn't see there wasn't a stick standing for miles. And they cut everything down. They cut it for their lumber mills. They cut it for fueling their steam engines. They cut it for fueling their mining equipment. They cut it for fueling the steamboats. The idea that there's too much wood for us to ever cut down, that's just not real. There is. We can, believe me, we can cut it down, you know. So this has to be a managed resource. Jeff and I did a plot analysis, and I witnessed some of it. And, you know, he came back with some, you know, very different numbers. I mean, he went out and he plotted out and chipped everything and weighed everything, and we got a very clear idea of what our green weight is out in the forest around Tok.
We had the contractor come in to do the fuel reduction work, and so it's a matter of how much per acre did it cost us to do the fuel reduction, and how many tons per acre did we get off it, and so how feasible is it to go out and go harvest specifically for this wood energy.
The plot analysis showed the green weight. The tree weight standing energy on average was 60 tons per acre, with a high of up to 180 tons per acre. This is the equivalent to 3,947 gallons of fuel oil per acre. Removal of fuels costs an average of $1,500 per acre, while heating oil is currently averaging $4.21 per gallon. That is $16,616 of fuel oil equivalent energy in each acre.
The results is that yes, we can go out and specifically harvest, you know, wood energy and for that sole purpose. And that was an assumption that everybody up till then had said, no, you can't do that. And so that was a big barrier that we broke through there.
In addition to the school, State Forestry was able to get funding for a seniors program offering free hazardous fuels assessments and removal around seniors' homes.
Having my brush and my trees cut to prevent a forest fire coming right to my home has been very beneficial. It's much easier to get around close to the house than I have, and it also brought in quite a bit of sunlight into my gardens and my grass and wildflowers. And it just opened up the whole area without taking all the trees. It's not clear cut at all. I would advise anyone, any community, if they can, get into the program.
As early projects progressed, the wood or biomass volumes actually harvested from around the community were stacking up to larger volumes than ever calculated for interior Alaska. What could be done to utilize these byproducts of community safety? Thinking back to the energy potential, was this a new source of green gold? It was everywhere, and woody biomass became a tangible source of usable fuel. Wood energy.
We started in the fall. We were working on the Community Wildfire Protection Plan. Got this idea, submitted it to the legislature as a capital improvement project. During the legislative session, we were bombarding them with letters of support to our legislators. Every time there was a finance committee hearing, we were there testifying in support of our project, pushing them to go ahead and fund it. And I think that's really essential. If you don't have that community support and the showing of support, then it probably isn't going to happen, especially as the money available decreases. Our idea for the chipper is it's for use throughout this area. All the other communities have the same wildfire potential that we have, the same exact wildfire danger and economic problems.
In 2008, the legislature awarded Tok $500,000 for capital improvement projects. They were able to purchase a mobile wood chipper and three other pieces of equipment needed to complete hazardous fuels harvest, chipping, and processing for biomass.
The machine is fairly lightweight. It's less than 50,000 pounds. It's mobile. It's street legal. You can pull it down the road with the tractor trailer. The thing that's really perfect for this, for our application, is that we have small diameter wood. Typically when you're doing fuel reduction stuff, you're dealing with a lot of smaller diameter material. And instead of having to handle just one or two pieces at a time like conventional chippers, you can literally take, you know, 40 trees like this and dump them in there at once.
The Tok community rents the chipper to neighboring communities and businesses for biomass projects such as the Delta School Project. The revenue earned is for maintenance and to replace the chipper in the future.
We identified about 55 acres around the school in units that needed to be mitigated. So each unit had its own prescription based on what the school wanted. It's our philosophy that it's the combination of handwork and mechanical together is really where you want to be. That keeps the cost down and it gets the best effect just like this right here. Once we figured out just how much wood we were going to end up with, we determined that we would end up with at least a year to almost 2 years worth of fuel for a Tok school, to heat a Tok school. Our options were is that, you know, we could get decks like this, we could take a match and set these decks on fire and just let all that heat, all that energy, all that smoke go up into the atmosphere. But that's crazy, really, when you think about it. It's expensive to do that, and so we'd have to spend more money to do that. Or we could take this resource that we've just harvested, and in one process, through one machine, through one grinder, we could take it from here and make it into a product that could go straight into a boiler to heat a school, to keep kids warm, and save the school a drastic amount of money over the years.
Once the trees are harvested, they are stacked in log decks outside the school in a fenced log yard. The needles are the only undesirable part of the tree for boiler wood energy. They can create a residue in the boiler, requiring more maintenance. By allowing the trees to cure for up to 1 year, the needles fall off and eliminate the problem. 1 day of chipping is enough fuel to last the school for 6 weeks of heat.
One of the unique aspects of this project and being able to prove out this technology here is we're the coldest spot in North America. Unofficially, we've seen 83 below zero here in Tok.
Tok School right now, the complex burns about 65,000 gallons of fuel a year. That's 55 to 65 depending on the severity of the winter. So the boiler we picked had to be big enough to accommodate that. We also had an interest in, and are working on this, an interest in developing power, electricity.
65,000 gallons of fuel oil at $4.21 per gallon cost $273,650. The school estimates it will save between 50 to 75% on heating and electrical costs annually. The boiler will use between 2 to 4 tons per day, 750 to 1,500 tons per year. This is 12 to 25 acres a year at 60 tons per acre. Currently, there are 8 years of hazardous fuels harvested and decked, ready to be ground up and burned to heat and power the Tok School, for a savings of $1 million or more.
Well, right now, with the saved money that we have, we've been able to hire an additional instructional coach. We've been able to bring the music program back. We've been able to bring the counseling program back. They haven't had those programs for more than 5 years. We've started preschools in every school in the district that does not have a Head Start program except for one, just because of the numbers. We've also been able to double the student activity accounts and the school supply funding with this money. When the stimulus funds ran out, and this was our project to maintain funds to continue the programs that were working well for students.
It's really important to note that when these forests are harvested for biomass, we improve the health of the forest, and we improve the health of the habitat for all the creatures that live there.
And this is our ESP, which uses a very small current of electricity to charge the particles in the smoke, and then it just collects them. What it puts out into the atmosphere is just incredibly clean. We did some parts per million assessments here when we first put the boiler online, and on the day that we did it, it was in January, and it was cold in Fairbanks. Fairbanks PPM parts per million was 42. Coming out of the stack was 14. So literally, walking down the street of Fairbanks on that day was not as healthy as sticking your head in the stack and taking a deep breath.
It provides jobs, and with the chipper and wildfire fuel removal, we hope that we're going to get additional jobs.
This boiler is capable of running a turbine to generate electricity. Tok Utility Alaska Power and Telephone is conducting a feasibility study to determine if they can economically generate 2 megawatts of power per year. This will replace 1 million gallons of fuel oil per year, worth over $3.5 million, leaving the community. Jobs, harvesting, processing, and moving wood energy will be needed. Up to 60 jobs may be created, and their earnings circulate within the community rather than going outside to pay for fuel oil.
We're offsetting fossil fuels. This is sustainable if it's done right.
Forest sustainability calculations historically are based on 120-year growth models for spruce sawlog forests. Currently, new research in forest sustainability calculations for a pioneer forest, that is, predominantly willow, cottonwood, aspen, and birch stands, are finding growth models could be as short as 20 to 60 years. When forest fires clear an area, pioneer tree species begin to fill in. Forest fires burn hundreds of thousands to millions of acres each year in Alaska. Harvest of the forest imitates wildfire in nature. Currently, there is no need or plan to harvest wood solely for the Tok School. There are enough hazardous fuels projects in the area to last 8 years.
And we've been doing forestry in North America for well over 100 years and for a couple hundred years around the world. And so it's not something new. The science of forestry is proven. We know what we're doing. We know how to grow trees. We know how to grow back beautiful forests.
The Thinning the forest also protects structures and resources from catastrophic wildfire. Fuel breaks give firefighters a chance to stop fires, and that saves the state a lot of money.
For every acre that's reduced, we save the state of Alaska $20,000 that they'd have to spend to fight a fire on that acre.
If you want to spend $100 million saving Tok every, you know, every 20 years, or you want to spend, you know, $4 to $5 million setting up and developing an infrastructure where we can manage that resource and have a safe community.
Planet as being something for the community, not just for one organization or one entity.
What makes it work is a community that works together. The turf is Tok. We're all in this together. This is our turf.
It's not just about the school. It's not just about the utility. It's about the safety, well-being, strength, economically and socially of our community in the future. This type of progress has long-term results. And once people make the connection, and generationally, these kids in the school understand that these trees out here are living, growing energy sources, then we never look back.
The solutions to the energy problem are local. You know, what's our local resource? You know, and you got to look out the window, see what's there, how you can use it in a sustainable, efficient way, and that's what you got to do. And so our solution is local. Our solution is the Tanana Valley Forest, which is a vast resource that is basically untouched. You know, Delta's solution is maybe wind energy. Healy's solution is coal. I mean, we tie those solutions together, and now we've got an infrastructure that everybody benefits from.
Wood energy is not a solution for every community in Alaska, but if it is managed properly, it is a valuable resource we can't afford to ignore.
If we look at these small trees and we look at this small diameter forest that we have in a new light of energy, it puts a whole new light on everything, because the energy is the issue of our day. It really is. I mean, there's wars that are being fought over energy, and we have to figure out our energy needs if we're ever going to be a sustainable society.
Green Gold, a project that started out to provide community safety, has ended up a sustainable, environmentally friendly energy source that creates jobs, a solution to skyrocketing fuel costs, and educates the public on fire safety and forest health. Definitely sounds like a golden opportunity for the future.
Ron Wise and Kenny Snow playing guitar and mando.
Thank you for all your attention on this, and we'll let the other presenters handle the rest of the program.
Just wanted to note that that comment is on the Dave Stancliffe is a very accomplished musician, and I wanted to commend you for a very well put together video here. Very impressive. I also noticed that we have two celebrities here too, Dave Stancliffe and Todd Pogue, being folks in the video there. Definitely sounds like a win-win all the way around here. And I guess I just wanted to, maybe I'll open it up to you if you have any comments before we open it up to questions by the committee members here. So do you have any?
I'd like to introduce myself. My name's Chris Mache. I'm the director of the Division of Forestry and the state forester. And I do have just a very brief PowerPoint to give you a little perspective on other areas of the state with regard to biomass projects, and then to answer questions you might have. So if you'd like, I could run through that PowerPoint, or I can take questions about the video you just saw.
If you could go ahead and proceed with the PowerPoint, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'll do that. So this is just about four or five slides, but I wanted to give you a better understanding of some of the other biomass projects, woody biomass projects that are being conducted or are being studied around the state of Alaska. This slide I got from Devaney Plenovich, who's the alternative energy coordinator for the Alaska Energy Authority, and it depicts the different wood biomass projects that are currently either operational, those purple triangles, ones that are under construction, which are the green, a design phase, which is the blue, and a feasibility study, which is the red. And as you can see, there's quite a number of those throughout the state. The first larger scale chip project that came online was actually in southeast Alaska. That's at the Craig School. down near on Prince of Wales Island near Ketchikan. The next larger scale chip project was the one we just saw the video about, which was the Tok School, and then the Delta School just came online this winter, which is also a chip-based woody biomass project. With the exception of the Tok School, all the others are just for space heating. There's no other combined heat and power operation like the Tok School at this stage. There's also been quite an explosion in garn boilers, and a garn boiler is like a big wood stove, and it essentially is solid wood that has to be hand-fed, usually twice a day, and there's garn boilers located in the communities of Tanana, Galkana. There's a couple down in Prince of Wales at Kaufman Cove, and a brand new one that just went at the Thorne Bay School that just also started operation this winter. A little different scale for a smaller community, that one that can't support perhaps a chip-based system, but the message I wanted to leave you with is there's a lot of different types of systems, and you have to size the system to the resource and the community and the heat load. This is just an example of the Delta School. It looks very familiar to you. It looks just like the Tok project. This building was completed just this past fall. The building and the boiler cost about $2.5 million of that. The Alaska Energy Authority appropriated $2 million to that effort, and I believe there was another capital appropriation directly from the legislature to the school district for $800,000, which made up the balance. The fuel that is used in this facility is white spruce chips from Logging and Milling Associates, which is a sawmill near Tok, Alaska, and this is the waste material from their slab wood after they've produced lumber from the logs. They chip the slabs up, and those are delivered here to Delta, and it costs the school district $64.20 a ton. And just a quick note about how biomass is measured. It's either measured as a green ton or a bone dry unit. And you'll see I put 18% moisture content, because that's actually a bit of an anomaly. Usually it's just a green ton or bone dry, but these slabs are already processed in a dry kiln, so that's why they're drier than normal. So it's 18% moisture content is what these show up at the facility at. This is a picture of the Hearst boiler that was being installed. You'll see the 2011 heating oil consumption for the school was 24,000 gallons. On a BTU basis, one ton of chips at 18% moisture content equals about 106 gallons of fuel oil. And to date, as of the 1st of March, they've saved about 85% of their fuel costs, according to what the cost of fuel oil is versus the cost of wood. And they're keeping very good statistics on this, so I think they can update you more later as things move along. One of the other bioenergy projects that's a little closer to home here is in Juneau. It's the Alaska facility just down the road from here. This is a pellet boiler. It heats the Sea Alaska building. You'll see a picture there of Nathan standing in front of the boiler. It's quite a different in size compared to the chip boilers. It doesn't need to be as large, though, because it burns a densified dry wood pellet, and those wood pellets are in the lower left of that second picture, and that truck is actually a truck that's delivering wood pellets, just like you'd have a fuel oil truck or a water delivery in Fairbanks or many other types of resources, and it's augered up into that bin that sits out front and then is augered into the building automatically. So it's very much an automated system, just like the chip system. And as far as the role of the Division of Forestry for woody biomass development, there's a few key points I'd like to leave you with. One of our most important tasks is to ensure that we have current forest inventories in the state forests and other state lands we manage for forestry purposes, and that we have the ability to do calculations for projects that are being proposed to ensure the wood supply is there, that it's sustainable over time, and that it's also economic to be produced and delivered to the facility at a price that makes the project work. It's very important to know what that delivered cost is and whether it actually will work or not. And so that's one of the things we do for the Alaska Energy Authority. Every woody biomass project that comes in, we screen for those kind of criteria and write a brief report on those aspects so that they are certain that the fuel supply is there for those projects that are proposed. As you saw from the video, it also helps communities with a number of issues. Probably the key ones are jobs up in the interior. It's reduction of wildland fire risks community. It improves habitat. And most important, well, one of the most important ones, I think, for the rural communities is it offers some local energy solutions, which is a very important and serious topic in many of our communities. The other key thing that we're working on right now with relation to the Alaska Power and Telephone Project is a long-term contract for woody biomass. This would be a 25-year commitment for the power facility that's being proposed in Tok, about a 2-megawatt facility, and we're working through the process now to put together a best interest finding and work through a timber sale that would commit a resource for that period of time for that facility. And I think with that, I'm going to end because there's two other speakers that need to go, and I'd be happy to answer questions and can do that now or after the other two speakers have presented their information.
Okay. Maybe if we could go ahead and listen to the next speaker there. Would that be Thomas Deerfield? Are you? Okay.
Let me close this for you.
If you could state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Thomas Deerfield. My company is Dalson Energy, based out of Anchorage, and I'm today here representing Alaska Power and Telephone. We've been contracted to be part of a team to do a, let me go full screen here. Okay, thank you. We've been contracted to be part of a team to do a full-scale investment-grade feasibility study for the utility for a 2-megawatt CHP, which is combined heat and power facility in Tok. Brief history, Alaska Power and Telephone is a leader in utility conversion to renewable energy. They've gone from almost 100% fossil fuel back in 99 to over 70% renewable energy generated power as of this year. Most of that, of course, is in hydropower. They've become a leader in developing small hydropower. And they started several years ago looking into biomass CHP and, of course, looking around the world, not to mention Lower 48, they see lots of examples of systems that that have been working for a long time. So we're not developing anything brand new here. The current situation is that Upper Tanana is an island power grid or an isolated grid. A 2-megawatt power generation station in Tok serves Tok, Tanacross, Tetlin, and Dot Lake and is not connected to any other grid outside the area. They pay the highest fuel cost for power gen in the state at ultra-low sulfur diesel at over $4 a gallon. Price, of course, is fluctuating, but mostly trending upwards. And the power costs right now are over 50 cents a kilowatt hour. I have friends in Glen Allen who are complaining mightily about 30 cents a kilowatt hour, and we don't have a lot of sympathy in Tok for that. The alternatives that have been researched by the utility are, of course, hydro. That would be the first choice because they're experts at developing that, and they've looked at the Arrick Creek area for a small hydro, and of course there are multiple issues that interfere with that. Hydrokinetic has its own set of issues. Wind turbines has an intermittency issue, works well when the sun, or I mean when the wind blows, solar when the sun shines. And both wind and solar, of course, are very seasonal, as well as small-scale hydro is somewhat seasonal in areas where it gets to 60, 70, 80 below. Water only works to generate power when it's liquid. So biomass CHP, combined heat and power, is what we're now looking at. We've done an initial pre-feasibility study, and it looked positive. So we're now doing, as I said, an investment-grade study that is being supported by Alaska Energy Authority and the utility. The benefits, of course, of biomass CHP is that it's demand power and not reliant are dependent upon wind or the sunshine. And the biggest benefits, of course, is, as has been mentioned and gets mentioned a lot, is that it's local fuel and local labor. The economic localization of the benefit of turning, instead of $3 million a year going out of the community, which is highly unsustainable for a community the size of Tok, to roughly $1 million a year in local feedstock, paid to local suppliers and harvesters and so on, is enormous and well beyond the $1 million that gets circulated in the community. This isn't necessarily going to result in hugely cheaper costs. The costs are going to be lower with biomass, and they're going to be stable, where with fossil fuels, we know that it goes up and down, but the trend line is up over time. It will be significantly cheaper. We'll wait till we're finished with the study to give you an accurate estimate, but we're estimating at least 30% to 40% reduction in power costs. State and federal support, obviously, we've got state support through the legislature and the Alaska Energy Authority. We're also seeing a lot of support through USDA, Rural Development, Forest Service, Farm Services, and NREL. But I'm concerned that those sources of support may be waning over time, and I'm suggesting that we move quickly to maximize our access to any federal support. Things to keep in mind are comparisons to conventional energy, where you talk about, you know, how do you compare a ton of wood to 100 gallons of oil, that sort of thing. Renewable fuels in general are hard. It's hard to compete with the BTU density of fossil fuels. Cheap fossil fuels are a hard act to follow, and in fact, virtually impossible. However, we've removed the cheap from that formula these days, and that's where we're going now. So the local fuels and local jobs, as we've talked about, and O&M costs are higher with all forms of biomass, whether it's cordwood, chips, pellets, whatever, but O&M is code speak. It actually means jobs, O&M being operations and maintenance. The feasibility study process that we're working on is dependent upon this long-term biomass harvest contract from the Division of Forestry that Chris has mentioned. We need roughly 25,000 green tons per year for 25-year period in order to secure the financing and justify the project. We're also working on a site review, technology review, which is an interesting project we're right in the middle of and about to do our first draft, which will look at all the available, commercially available and reliable forms of small-scale CHP technology available in the world, and then available in North America, and then available and appropriate to a climate like Tok, and then, of course, permitting environmental and financial analysis. We intend to have that report done by the end of June. And that is my presentation. Thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to remain as well for questions.
Okay, thank you. And Todd Poog, are you up next there? You could state your name and affiliation for the record.
Chairman Foster, representatives, my name is Todd Pogue, superintendent, Alaska Gateway School District. I've been the superintendent for the past 5 years, and I graduated from Nome Belts, and interesting enough, Larry's signed my diploma that's hanging on my wall in my office, so he's on there too, and I believe my dad was Chairman Foster's principal at one time.
This is true.
So, I do have a short video, and then they said you have 8 minutes, so we create a iMovie to kind of overview our project from the beginning to the end. And when we're creating this, we know we're not going to win any Academy Awards like that last video was. You know, we kind of hand created about iMovie and iPods and iPads. So if you allow, I'll show the short film.
Absolutely. Thank you, Todd.
Alaska Gateway School District serves an area in the midst of the boreal forest of eastern interior Alaska. This is a region that is rich in natural beauty and resources and traditions. The forest is both a vast resource of energy and a hazard from the annual threat of wildfire. The Tok School Biomass Project proposed to use wood fuel identified for mitigation in the Community Wildfire Protection Plan to heat and power the school. In 2007, the school district partnered with Tok Forestry and the Umbrella Corporation to secure legislative funding to purchase the equipment needed to process waste biomass so that it could be used as a fuel source. That summer, Tok Forestry did a fire remediation project around the school, creating a safe evacuation point and decking over a year's worth of energy. Years of feasibility studies and efforts to secure funding culminated in a $3.2 million grant from the Alaska Energy Authority in 2009 to build a biomass heating facility at Tok School. In March of 2009, the school district sent the project manager, Scott McManus, with the maintenance director to Montana to tour schools that were already using wood heat. They gained valuable knowledge that helped form the basis of a design intended for a severe northern climate. The district worked closely with CTA on the design, which was based on the heat requirements of the school, on how much fuel had to be stored to get through many weeks of 50 below conditions or colder, on keeping long-term maintenance costs down, and on how many education dollars could be saved in the long run. Rex Goolsby was hired as the on-site owner's representative for the project, and Yukon Construction got the bid to build the plant. We broke ground in May of 2010. And poured concrete through the month of June. Boiler and biomass equipment begin arriving in late July. 100,000 pounds of biomass machinery from Georgia, Michigan, Canada, and Austria were shipped by truck, air, and barge to Tok. By mid-July, we were able to set the 40-foot stack and 60,000-pound boiler, and the building was starting to take shape. That June, a lightning strike started the Eagle Trail fire, which threatened Tok and forced a full evacuation of Tanacross, consuming 18,000 acres of the Tanana Valley Forest and costing upwards of $15 million. The Eagle Trail fire burned enough wood in 2 weeks to heat and power Tok School for 400 years.
That's Tanacross School right there, just about took it.
During the first 5 months of operations, we put approximately 420 tons of biomass through the boiler, saving 27,500 gallons of heating fuel. The plant is extremely clean. Ash output is low and can be used for fertilizer, and it puts out emissions that range between 14 and 40 parts per million. Thank you. June of 2011, we began the electrical phase of the project and began installing the equipment needed to run a 75 kW steam turbine in anticipation of long-term savings that would be in the millions of dollars. Integration of steam piping requires hundreds of feet of high-pressure welding by AME-certified welders. Our local crew helps with the layout where they can. The contract for the turbine includes installation of a condenser array required to dissipate the heat from the boiler. Steam from the boiler goes through the turbine to the condenser array and into this heat exchanger that heats Tope School. The condensed water goes to this deaerator unit before completing the cycle and then going back to the boiler. Once the bulk of the primary equipment was installed, we conducted the initial blowout of the system, clearing construction debris from inside the steam pipe by releasing hundreds of pounds of steam pressure in one sudden rush.
There's really no other major projects to do as far as the construction is concerned.
With the bulk of the primary construction completed, the plant begins to come to life.
You're winding up, huh?
The details of fuel acquisition are being worked out with Tope Forestry.
Is prepared to sign a long-term contract with the Gateway School District for up to 10 years for a fuel source primarily composed of the fuel reduction materials from in and around the Tope.
The district currently has enough biomass index to fuel the school for 5 to 8 years. With long-term contracts in the works, the district has a renewable source of fuel that will last indefinitely. Summer of 2012, the district hopes to be able to heat the outlying buildings in the Tope School complex and build a greenhouse capable of growing 20,000 pounds of fresh produce for a food service program.
Okay. Chairman Foster, and just a couple, we did turn the electrical unit, the low-speed turbine on in January, and we're creating 20 kWs of electricity. And Tope School, at peak demand, takes about 120, so we weren't satisfied with that. We turned it off, did another punch list, turned it back on in February, and we were able to create about 40 kWs of electricity. We're still not satisfied, so We're kind of in a stage where it's test and develop, and we're going to turn on in March, and we hope to create 50 to 65 kW of electricity. And so if we can cut our electrical use at Tok School in half, and the byproduct will be the heat will be free after that, so we'll be saving 100% of the heating and 50% of the electrical. So that'll be at the current rates that are out there right now, 52 cents per kilowatt and $4 a gallon, that's going to be quite a sum of money. So.
And as a school, you are paying the full 54 cents per kilowatt hour. You don't get the BCE benefit.
Yeah, that's correct, Chairman.
Yeah. Real good. Well, I would like to open it up to committee questions. Are there any questions? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the Tok Gateway School District, is it primarily one school or is it several schools?
We have seven schools in the district and a correspondence program. We have approximately 400 students district-wide.
And is this the turbine with the electricity? I'm sorry, the boiler with the turbine attachment, is that primarily at one school, or is that being able to feed other schools besides that one?
No, that is just at Tok School. And right now we have a grant in for $750,000 approximately to run a heat loop over to our multipurpose building, so we'll be able to heat another building also. And right now we're at the $29 million mark, and the legislature usually funds about $40 million, so hopefully we'll get that grant through Alaska Energy Authority this year.
Okay. If I may, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
What were some of the factors that you were able to get from 20 megawatts to 40 megawatts? What were some of the changes that you were able to make to get that in output?
We need to increase the heat in the boiler, and we also needed to increase the air capacity inside the boiler because it wasn't burning all the wood. It was burning so hot that it was – you wouldn't want to put your head in the burner or the output, like they said about Fairbanks there earlier. When we were burning too hot, we were getting some brown smoke coming out the stack, so we needed more air, so we have to order bigger fans to put inside to keep the combustion unit a little cooler.
Okay. And then one last question.
Sure. Representative.
How long do these boilers usually last?
They're supposed to last between 25 and 35 years.
Okay.
And there's some that have been running 50 years or more. And this low-speed turbine that we ended up with, it's in its third setting, so it's 30 years old, and it's been reconditioned and rebuilt back to brand-new specs, and that's supposed to last 50 years.
Mm. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure, and Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple of questions. I'm not quite sure that kind of sort them up for some people. I'm not sure who is best to answer, but I will ask Mr. Deerfield. You mentioned that federal support is ephemeral, fleeting. What would be the best vehicle, the most available federal source of funds, and what is the timeline?
There are, the 2012 requests for proposals from the various federal agencies are only now coming out, so I don't have a full list, but historically we look to NREL and the various USDA agencies, which would include Farm Services, Forest Service, and
Rural Development,
thank you.
Could you, for the record, say what NREL is?
NREL is, through the chair, sorry, is National Renewable Energy Lab, which is also a quasi-federal agency.
Okay. And backing up, if I could ask Chris Mace a question with your indulgence, sir.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bit of a set of questions, but often it seems whenever there is a good human use of nature, there are those who jump in to say we shouldn't mess with nature. Are there any environmental or forest health detriments by harvesting the amount of spruce in the interior that we're seeing or proposing to see?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, that's one of the key points I think I was trying to make earlier, is that we can do this as a sustainable activity. And we have to ensure that that allowable cut, which is that figure we don't want to exceed in any given year, so that this fuel supply is in perpetuity available. I think you certainly will have people that will probably place objections to the use of wood because of the harvesting juxtaposition. It's happened in other parts of the country, and when woody biomass has come up, the topic has been discussed here in Southeast Alaska, and there have been environmental organizations here that have labeled old-growth biomass. So That gives you an idea of perhaps where some people might go with their opinions about using wood biomass for energy production. But I'd have to say that I believe that is a very much a minority viewpoint.
Are they trying to equate that if old growth is biomass, that therefore biomass is old growth, and try and conflate the two? This is scrubs black spruce, right? This is not majestic sitka spruce.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's correct. Here in Southeast, it is primarily coming from mills that do harvest old growth timber, so that's why they labeled the biomass as old growth. I guess that would have been an attempt to negatively label it. In the interior, that issue has not been brought forward. I think the interior is a little more pragmatic because of the wildland fire situation we have in the interior, which, of course, we don't have that here in Southeast, and also the high energy costs in the interior as compared to many Southeast communities.
Right, right. For the record, I don't mean to denigrate the noble black spruce. But
no, that's I understand. That tree, for the record, is also known by my firefighters as gasoline on a stick.
And I've got a series of questions actually for Mr. Stancliffe. I don't know if that should hang back or.
By all means.
Thank you. Just ask Mr. Stancliffe, what's the cost of the chipper we saw a couple examples of, like per unit, and then what's the cost of the boilers?
The chipper was around $375,000, and there was additional cost with the log loader that went with the chipper. And, of course, it's also chipping the fuel for the Delta School, and if Glen Ellen comes online, it'll chip for that school as well. And it was always conceived as a community and area fuel source. The other thing that hasn't been mentioned, which is real important and ties into that, Representative Sadler, is the Delta and all the schools that are now adding biomass equipment. We're trying to make it all compatible, and so the chipper that works for Toke will work for Delta, will work for Glen Ellen. The boilers, the training, and the cross-training that goes on, it's just so much more economical to have compatible equipment. And once you solve the problem, and Toke is kind of the model that people are looking at, it's much easier to just follow that path. So the chipper is part of the beginning of that path.
Right. And I can see that, again, there's lots of spruce area in the interior, and if they could replicate this model in as many places as possible, I'm sure there might be some place where the economies of scale get down to where it's not economical, but I think that might be a long ways out in the future. But I did appreciate the information in the video that there was a need to age the trim or the cut for a year. Is there any need to age the chips at all, or are they ready to burn as soon as they come out of the chipper?
Well, interestingly enough, if you're going to produce briquettes or burn good, clean firewood and not produce problems with pollution, like they're having in Fairbanks, pellets are very dense, briquettes are slightly less dense, and wood dry cured after a fire is fairly dense. It all runs around 12 to 13 or 14% moisture content ideally, but in biomass, because of the combustion procedures and the high temperature, typical wood stove 600 or 700 degrees, the biomass boiler closer to 1700 degrees, they actually want the chips between 30 and 50% moisture. In Sweden, there's a plant running at 50% moisture and 93% efficiency, and two-thirds of its load is what we now fill our landfills with, as well as wood.
Okay. And let's see what. And again, I'm going to leave to Representative Wilson to ask questions about the environmental and particulate aspects of things. I think you will.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think with Chris to start with, and when I was down in Toke, they had kind of plots of trees, and they were growing. If you haven't ever been down there, the university actually was doing it, but they had plots of all different types of trees, and they were measuring them growing, and they were running out of money in the university cycle. Do you know if anybody's taking that project over?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Wilson. There is a growth and yield program at the University of Alaska, and that program still is funded and still being operated. And the project you refer to is actually on the Toke Experimental Forest. It's a unit within the state forest. And there's a number of projects there, but the one that in particular you probably observed was one where it's referred to as a species trial, where they're looking at lodgepole pine as one of the main species for a drier climate, drier conditions. That tree responds better as a pine than a spruce does for drier growth. And also we're looking at it for shorter rotation use, so some, kind of along the agroforestry line where you're almost like farming the tree. So there is work being done there. I'm not as familiar with the university budget as I could be, but I know there are some requests pending through the Interior delegation about research and financial support for research in biomass.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. And also understand that there's a 25-year plan through forestry, and I'm not sure where it's at. I've just heard about it.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Wilson. That's the 25-year contract that we're working on right now, and we have a couple different authorities we can sell timber under. At least two of them allow us to sell for longer periods of time, up to 25 years. One of the key things we need to do is we have to go through the process of writing a forest land use plan for that area, best interest finding, and then a final, draft contract, which then we'll negotiate terms with once we get to that point. So there's a couple of things that are going on parallel right now with what AP&T is doing with their feasibility study, and we have to bring those things together and merge sometime this summer. Hopefully in June we'll have a draft best interest finding out and a draft contract for the public to begin looking at, and that's when we'll start having more public meetings about whether we can commit to a 25-year supply or not. We fully expect that we can, but we still have a process we have to go through to make that decision.
So would you have to do that for each and every project? So let's say that Fairbanks would like to look at that, and we're kind of excited because we have a gentleman who's doing kind of a landfill one and making pellets and energy powering his own plant, as well as we also have a pellet plant as well. So when somebody's looking into a project, how does forestry come in and say, for your area, if you want to do a chipper, it may take longer because we have to do one of these, you know, studies, which Fairbanks really, we don't like studies. We like to do it instead. You know, that we might be better to go with pellets or go with some other, or the briquettes. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of go in with AEA and then also the forestry to find out what's better for the community? Because I think Fairbanks would have the same issue as you've seen with some, where I could see the pellet being a pretty easy one to do, but when you start talking about, I don't know if anybody's ever been to Tok before, but they have big piles of trees, and sometimes that gets the environmentalist out saying that's a bad thing, although it's good for stopping wildfires. But how do you guys work with AEA on those kind of ideas?
Yeah, again, through the chair, Representative Wilson, we call that essentially due diligence, just like I think it's referred to by a number of other industries. And our role is the supply side, because we're the supplier of the raw material for these types of projects. We also have expertise in terms of, the types of fuels, the types of harvesting systems, the forest management aspect of these projects. So we'll offer our technical advice, and actually when this project first started with AP&T, we recommended that AP&T engage a forestry consultant that had expertise so we could talk basically tree to tree to each other instead of us trying to talk to trees to AP&T, who didn't really know tree speak. So we work with a team of people is what it boils down to, and we do have a lot of data and analysis capabilities in the division, and so we do provide some technical assistance to AEA to help basically ensure that the fuel supply is sustainable, it's available, and it can be delivered at a price that's going to meet the thresholds of whatever the project is, be it a pellet mill, a chip plant, you know, just firewood. So.
And one final question.
A follow-up.
I noticed you had an electrostatic precipitator, and we were kind of looking at on a residential, found one in Germany, but they wouldn't sell it to us because we were in the U.S. So where did you get yours?
Tom?
Mr. Chair? We got ours from Germany.
I guess you forgot to tell them you were in the U.S.
So you know. CT, engineering and architectural firm, and they purchased this for us. They sold it to a company in the U.S. that sold it to us.
That's what I figured we'd have to do, too. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I could add a little addition to that. To Representative Wilson, the facility I showed on that slideshow, the Sea Alaska facility, they also put an electrostatic precipitator. Nathan would be happy to give you a tour sometime of that if you'd want to walk down there and see that. It's a really interesting study. They probably didn't need it on a pellet boiler, but they wanted to make extra sure right in downtown Juneau that they wouldn't have any issues with any kind of particulate. So they kind of went an extra step, but it might be worth the trip down there to see that and talk to them about where they acquired that.
Absolutely. Yeah, Mr. Chair, somebody had sent me a nice video and showed how, I'm not sure they're as easy to put in as it showed, but basically the rod would just go down and would collect that pollution, and really what I thought would help our PM...
To reach assistance, press 0. To enter a breakout session, press 1. For meeting admittance options, press...
And at ease... We'll be back on record here.
But anyway, okay. You know, it seemed like a cheaper way for us to work on our PM 2.5 because you wouldn't have to change out all these appliances, but you would put this down your chimney. It looked like it collected pretty easily. The question would be is how often would you have to clean it, since really you don't really want to be on your roofs when the snow's out there and it's negative. So do you have to clean yours very often, or?
And Todd, if you could and maybe also if you could just repeat your answer regarding the Germany, just for the record, too.
As far as the electromagnetic precipitator, we purchased that from Germany, and however, we had to purchase it through another company that sent it to us. And it's enough that when they came down to put that in, no one could understand what they were saying because no one in the area talked German. So, and they had a few little issues they had to deal with, so we had to find someone that could halfway understand them when they were putting it into place for the biomass boiler. So, and about every 2 weeks, we have two barrels underneath, and they fill up with ash, and then we just roll them out and then, you know, deposit the ash. Whoever wants the ash, is good for gardening and other things like that also, and then we have, they're about every 2 weeks.
For the electro precipitator, you don't have to take it out of the system, do you, to clean it?
No, they're just, you just unhook them and you wheel the barrel out and you dump it and you wheel it back over.
Cool.
Okay.
Thanks.
Real good. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to follow up on a question that my colleague from North Pole asked earlier, I believe to apply for the AEA grants, you have to have a financial feasibility study. And so I think that's probably why that's required. My first question is, now, some of the pictures that I saw you showed that you had cleaned a lot of the undergrowth out, and there were the bigger trees were left standing. And so since you clear that out, do those trees grow considerably faster once you get rid of the undergrowth out of there? Or has anyone measured that? Or?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson. When you reduce competition in a stand like that, you can expect that the trees will usually respond in growth, and it can be both in height growth and diameter growth, and you would expect to see that. There's less competition for water, sunlight, and nutrients on the site. So typically in forestry, we will do that kind of thinning to improve growth on trees. The key thing with those that defensible space around a home, you notice that a lot of the trees were pruned to reduce the ladder fuel close in. And the biggest issue for us is a safe place for firefighters to work. When you have a real heavy fuel right up to a house, it's not a safe place to put people on the ground. There they can see, they can move around, they can catch spot fires that might spot in before the an actual flaming front arrives. And so it gives them a safe place to work. It's not that it's 100% going to save the house, but it improves the odds dramatically that we can defend it if a fire threatens it.
And just a quick follow-up on that particular question.
Follow-up, is it, and that's for Chris?
Yes.
Okay.
And so does that make the trees that are left, since they're going to grow faster, do they become a bit more economically valuable because they may be able to be harvested and sawed and sold?
Yeah, again, through the chair, Representative Peterson. Right around the home, the homeowner is probably more an aesthetic type situation. They might be harvesting some of that for firewood use right there locally for their own home. But certainly out in the commercial sense, we do commercial thinning. We call it pre-commercial thinning, especially here in Southeast, and that's the reason we do it, is to allow those stands to grow quicker, bigger, and the rotations are shortened because of that. We do some of that work in the interior, but it's generally not as necessary in interior Alaska.
So. Okay. All right, thanks. And then I just want to do make sure we got one point across that David mentioned about his trip to Sweden, that biomass boilers can use a mix of wood chips and also a solid waste both. Is that correct?
That's correct. You can mix wood chips in with coal as well. There's co-fire. It's called co-firing. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, on the one of the topics that's happened locally is the local firewood cutters, harvesters, some commercial, some just residential, very concerned about all their wood supply going away. Also, the people that harvest house logs and saw logs also concerned. And Division of Forestry is on top of that, both locally and in Fairbanks. And one of the nice things about biomass is working roads out into otherwise small pockets of good firewood, good house logs, good saw logs that would never be touched because they're too small to be economical to put a road out. These roads out for biomass are going to actually increase supplies in all those categories. The chipper that you saw can take up to a 16-inch diameter tree and shred it in about 2 minutes. But that's not the typical tree that we're feeding in there. The typical hazardous fuel, 4, 6, 7, maybe up to 8 inches, those better-looking trees, forestry is going to come together with a plan to have uses for those. So this is not going to eliminate these other multiple uses of our wood resources.
And also, Eielson currently uses a mix of coal and garbage on the in their boiler on Eielson Air Force Base. And you mentioned that it takes 25 to 30 years for the regrowth to take place. Is that correct?
Yes, again, through the chair, Rep. Peterson. That is only in the fuel hazard fuel mitigation areas, and that's a very short rotation. The normal rotation we use on the Tanana Valley State Forest for spruce is 100 years, and it's 80 years for hardwoods, which would be birch and aspen. The reference in the video that you saw would be for the areas where we've taken black spruce out of a fuel break, and that's what we refer to as a hazard fuel, and we want to keep that fuel break in a hardwood species. In Tok, usually what we get back is aspen sprouts back first. Spruce will start coming up through under that aspen. Typically, the spruce will take over the site again at about age 60. It'll grow through the aspen. The aspen will start to die back, and you'll go into that longer rotation. So what we intend to do is to mow down those hardwoods about on a 30-year cycle. We need to do some work on figuring out what the best cycle is to make sure we keep it in hardwoods. And that is what we want to keep it in from a fire standpoint. Also, I'd point out that's also a very good browse for moose. They like them in those age classes.
Okay.
And so there's some unique benefits you get from maintaining those breaks in a hardwood.
Mr. Chairman, if I might add, this is Dave Stancliffe with Alaska Paramount Fallen and Alaska Gateway School. One of the things that happens in the interior and in a lot of our fire situations is the nutrient layer, the duff, you know, can be sterilized on a real hot fire down as much as 18 inches. And so when Mother Nature clear cuts, that's called a wildfire. The wildlife suffers, the environment suffers, the energy is wasted, but the regrowth and regeneration is can actually be much slower than if it's man-cut, man-stimulated, and regenerated. So we're finding out in biomass worldwide through the planting of trees and more accelerated regeneration that we're actually carbon positive. Even though biomass is considered carbon negative, it's actually we're doing the atmosphere a better service when it's managed correctly. And we're fortunate and we have that expertise here in Alaska to do all that. So that's an important consideration because those questions come up and you'll hear them back in your districts. Well, are they going to cut all the trees? Is it just going to be clear cutting? And what we have to remember in Tok, 1 million acres around us is burned on two-thirds size. It's going to burn and be wasted in a very inefficient and dirty manner if we don't use it ourselves. It's not an option of we don't cut them and they just stay there forever. That's not how Mother Nature works in Tok. And I'm not too much different in the Fairbanks area.
That's right.
So that's a little different dynamic, and it changes the politics and the focus of people saying we'd much rather burn it cleanly for energy than have it burn us. And that's really where we're at. So.
Great. Well, good. And Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Actually, a question for Chris Mace again. I know DNR does area plans that set out what the best use of land is. And obviously, you must have given your assent to the operations around Tok, but do the area plans elsewhere in the state encourage or inhibit this kind of thing from taking place elsewhere? Are there adjustments needed?
No, through the chair, Representative Sadler. No, we work with the area plans as the updates occur. Right now, the eastern Tanana, it used to be the Tanana Basin area plan, has been divided into a east and west half. That's going through an update process. And as you know, lands are classified for different uses. Forestry is one of the classifications. Wildlife habitat is one. Settlement, you know, there's a number of different things they can be classified as. We're fortunate that we have a large state forest in the interior Alaska, the Tanana Valley State Forest, so that's a legislatively designated state forest. So the area plan does not affect that. That stays as forest land. We also have a new state forest here in southeast Alaska we established 2 years ago and added to that. We have a bill that will be heard, SB 159, I think it's going to be heard over on the Senate Resources Committee next week, that would establish Susitna State Forest, which is something hopefully you all hear more about here in the next few weeks as this session continues. So we're trying to do aggressive work in the area planning process whenever they're being updated to make sure that forestry is something that's discussed, and these area plans all have recommended establishment of these state forests as part of that area planning process. So we're staying very engaged in that, and we'll continue to do that as other area plans are updated.
So to follow up on that, so you're saying that the state forest is the question, what is the best classification for land in order to facilitate the woody biomass, power generation, and heat? Is it state forest or is it forestry or what is it?
Yeah, through the chair, Rep. Sadler, there's two. If it's in a state forest, then that's certainly the strongest way to make sure you have a long-term sustainable supply. The other is in the area plans, it can be just classified for forestry use, which means that's the primary use. It's certainly not the only use. All those lands are multiple-use lands, just like they are in state forests. But a classification can be changed as the area plan is updated. So one cycle, it might be forestry classified, and 15 years later, maybe there's a need for more agricultural land or more settlement land, and so that classification can change. So from a long-term standpoint, it's best to have it in a legislatively designated area, like a state forest, but we can also work with it as just forest classified. But there is a longer-term risk that that classification can change. So,
and just to wrap it up for whoever was looking at the record on this, so is there any classification that would prohibit this kind of work?
Again, through the chair, Rep. Sadler. No, often they're co-designations, so a lot of times you'll see habitat and forestry go together, recreation and forestry. So there's usually a primary use, so it would be best to work with lands that are classified for forestry. Other classifications wouldn't prohibit it, but that would not be the primary use for that piece of property. It would be an allowed use that we'd have to work through the management agency to allow that to happen. And Tok would be a good example because those lands are settlement lands, and so we have to work with Division of Mining, Land, and Water through that community wildfire protection plan that was highlighted to actually have access to get the forest resources on that property. We have to have their concurrence, essentially, for that activity.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. I have a question for Thomas Deerfield. This is Representative Foster. And I had a side conversation regarding the possibility of Stebbins using driftwood. And I was just wondering, what are the obstacles to using driftwood? Is it less efficient? Can you elaborate on that a little more?
Chairman Foster, that was a unique set of challenges in Stebbins, and it was a pilot project that unfortunately changed in the end, and that boiler in a box that we built ended up going to Elam for some other reasons. But the point of the project in Stebbins was to do a test on both the long-term sustainability of the volumes of fire of driftwood that could be collected on a long-term basis and not interfere with local woodcutters and so on. And it was also going to be a test of the ability of the boilers to safely and cleanly combust wood that's been embedded with salt from being in the ocean for a period of time. So it was a pilot project to test on several levels those questions that has not yet been resolved.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see here. Representative Peterson, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to follow up a little bit, and you mentioned that some land could be cleared that was state land. What about parkland? If something's as designated parkland, could they clear the underbrush out there? And wouldn't that actually protect the parkland from potential wildfire?
Yeah, again, through the chair, Representative Peterson, it's a good question, and we have done hazard fuel mitigation projects on some park lands, but it has to be, of course, in concurrence with the management entity, which would be DOP, Division of Parks. And the ones I'm thinking of in particular have been in Anchorage, where there's been some spruce bark beetle forest health issues that have killed spruce trees, and we've worked with the Division of Parks to do mitigation efforts on some of those lands. I wouldn't consider that a large commercial harvest. It's been more hand treatments with hand crews and targeted reduction.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was Chris Mesh. And another question, Representative Zadler.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. Learned to ask this question. I don't know. What would you require or request the legislature to continue your success? Benign neglect or more money in the renewable energy loan fund? Or you guys just find the way you are?
Everyone's to answer that.
Well, this is Dave Stancliffe, having been on both sides of that question, having worked for policymakers and realized that there are more projects to be funded than there is possible money to go around sometimes, I think the looking at other legislatures, my home state of Vermont that has over half the biomass projects in existence in the United States, over 40 schools, 3 universities, a 70-megawatt plant in Burlington, Vermont. The thing that has made them successful is to make sure that the Division of Forestry has the resources available to stay ahead of, just slightly ahead of, the demand as it develops. Because what's going to happen in Alaska, that's happened in Montana, Vermont, countries throughout the world, is when people start to see the value of the resource that they have threatening them, and the wisdom in transporting wood resources up and down our river corridors instead of barges of fuel, the economic and social advantages of having local employment and stimulation fuel bought locally, this can mushroom very quickly. And advice, I guess, would be is to listen to the Division of Forestry and DNR, encourage them to communicate their needs. And the cautionary thing that I discussed with Representative Wilson was, we want to make sure that whatever funding goes out there, the projects are sound so that we don't have failures that cause the collapse of the initiative that we really need to keep moving forward. So those are all big things for you to review, but my experience that we've had in TOC is right now we have one area forester, no front desk or person to answer the telephone, and one assistant, and more work than probably 4 people could be doing. And that's not the fault of DNR necessarily. It's just they just have so many resources to go around. But it would be helpful to get to identify the types of teams and the types of people needed to address these projects that are going to be coming online in perhaps your district and make sure they have adequate funding. I hate to say that because that's what everyone asks you for.
I hadn't heard it yet, so that's why that.
And just
a follow-up.
Just one more comment to lengthen the sustainability of the amount of my biomass material we have available. If you mix it in with garbage, that would lengthen the amount of time that those trees would have to regrow, and so that the cycle could be replenishing
and we would never run out. Is that the idea?
The idea is everything burns at some temperature, and we have the technology to handle the emissions in most cases. In the British Isles, there's a tremendous value out of peat. And they do have some wood resources, but not what we have available to us here. So, you know, there's other biomass resources, refuse being one of them. The largest, and they're all privately owned utilities in Sweden. No public subsidies. The utility runs the refuse service. They handpick all the materials out that come in that shouldn't be burnt. And then they charge a fee for the collection of those resources. And once they're through processing them and they bring them over to burn, 70% of their biomass is zero expense to the utility. Free fuel, because they're handling the refuse that way. And then they add the wood in with it. Every area is, you know, we wouldn't have the relationship between the refuse and the biomass, but perhaps in the more populated areas, you would. And in Anchorage, where you're looking to do something with all the hazardous fuels on the hillsides and in the Eagle River, and you have a perfect opportunity to heat some schools or public buildings. And as soon as people see the possibilities, they'll use whatever is economically and environmentally sound.
Right. Thank you.
I sense a lead into somebody's waste-to-energy resolution.
It's amazing. This timing is amazing, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, I could also respond to Rep. Sattler's earlier question, if you'd like, on the budget item. And, yeah, this is Director Mache. We do have in the governor's budget under the capital side a specific request for a Tok long-term timber sale for biomass energy. And since this will be the first longer-term contract we've done in many years, a 25-year commitment, we want to make sure we dot all the I's, cross all the T's, and that we've thought ahead about any issues that might arise for a commitment of that time frame. So it's a relatively modest request. It's $200,000, and it is in the capital side of the budget.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to let Rep. Peterson know that North Pole, those were called recyclable, not garbage.
Okay.
Yeah. It's about that terminology.
I would just follow up with one more comment.
It's Thomas Deerfield.
Representative Sadler's question through the chair. This is Thomas Deerfield again from Dawson Energy and Alaska Power and Telephone. It's my opinion that looking forward, the state of Alaska for rural schools will eventually be heating all of its rural schools and the majority of its community buildings with biomass as we go forward and as fossil fuels continue to escalate in cost. Obviously, we don't have the infrastructure and the logistics in place yet, and this is the early steps of what we need to do to accomplish that. We don't have to look far outside of Alaska to see that we're not recreating a wheel here. This emerging technology is only emerging in Alaska. These technologies and this use of local resources is widely done in lower 48 in Canada and, of course, all over Europe. So we're in the early stages of catching up at this point. And this question of how long does it take and the rotations for how long does it take to grow a tree, whether it's 20 years, 50 years, or 100-year rotation cycle in order to create new trees to then cut and use again. My question in response, of course, is rhetorical, is how do you compare a 100-year growth cycle to the time frame it takes to grow a barrel of oil or a million cubic feet of gas? And I'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you. I think you all have made a very compelling case for the benefits of this technology, and I just want to commend you. And we do have a question, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the PowerPoint presentation by Mr. Mache, I was just curious, on the 8 locations that we have throughout the statewide that are operational, are those all self-sustained with the wood supplies they have in the area, or do they have to import any type of pellets or anything?
Yeah, this is Director Mache again through the chair to Representative Tuck. No, those are all self-sustaining operations. They have all the wood supplies they need available locally. Two of them use waste from sawmills. The garden units all procure essentially firewood locally from local vendors. And so, yes, short answer is it's available near the community.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, I have another question.
Follow-up.
And it probably goes back to the TOC people. But looking at how is the school right now generate its power? Where does it get its power from? Is it a standalone system that's a generated system on their own, or are they on a power grid with the city, or how is it? How is it done?
Mr. Chairman, Dave Stancliffe and Superintendent Pogue is going to join me here. Prior to the biomass conversion, and even now, at least in part, TOC, about 1,200 people, the grid, the main grid is within 20 miles of the center of the community. That grid is operated by Alaska Power and Telephone. It's about a meg and a half power supply, and that was the power supply for everyone. And you saw two things in the presentation, and one of them wasn't very well defined. That big cleared area that was all dirt, that was the only communication tower in TOC for public safety, DOT, and emergency services. And prior to that fire protection, that communication site was just, the trees were right up to it. And the point I'm making here, Representative Tuck, is when a fire happens in TOC, the first thing that happens is our power goes off because the power companies start losing lines, causes problems, and they have to balance their system. So people lose all communications, including our troopers and DOT. Now with the school system independent of that, that can function on its own, that's a backup communication systems, and I don't think that was brought out in the DVD. And so the school is part-time on the grid now, used to be full-time on the grid, and as they bring the power levels up, it'll diminish. So we had to balance our power with the grid, and Alaska Power and Telephone is working closely with the school to make sure that those cycles are absolutely balanced, because when you put a power source into a grid, you better be on the same cycle or it's not going to be very pretty.
Follow up, Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My point I was trying to make was, is there opportunities to be able to sell power on the grid, especially in the off season when school may not be going on? I know you guys are hoping for 75 kilowatts. I don't know what the consumption of the school is or what their peak demand would be, but I just was curious if there was an opportunity for that.
Well, Chairman Foster. Yeah, right now the peak demand is about 150 kilowatts, so we're trying to get to between 50 and 65 so we can get to at least one-third, a little more than one-third of the demand rate. And right now there isn't an agreement in place, but AP&T, the local utility, lets us turn our electricity on and run through their lines into the school, and our electricity does not get through the school, so we're always running with AP&T right now. We're not a closed circuit at all unless we close off the biomass plant by itself. So we're always going into the grid over to the school, but it doesn't make it out of the school. But so right now, there is no agreement in place that where we can, net meter back to the AP&T, and that would be our ultimate goal, is to have some type of net metering in place.
And one follow up,
Representative Tuck.
And then in the summertime months, what's your peak demand looking at?
Well, Chairman Foster, during our summertime months, it goes down to about 80 kilowatts.
Okay, so it's still a little bit more than what you're producing.
And the biomass plant runs about 15 to 20, and the school runs around 120. So, and the biomass plant first covers the first generates electricity for the biomass plant, and then whatever's left goes out and covers the school. But at this time, none of what we've been creating has gotten past TOC school.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Real good. Thank you, Representative Peck. Are there any further questions? Seeing none, we very much appreciate you coming in and giving us this information. So I think with that, the next committee meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, March 13, in the Barnes Committee Room. The committee will be hearing HB 323, which is the non-attainment area home heating system grants, HB 336, which is the energy assistance program and vouchers, and then HB 357, which is the ADA Sustainable Energy Program, and bills previously heard. So with that, this meeting is adjourned, and it is 4:40. Thank you.